Welcome. You are about to join the story of Lioness. Listen as host and author Diane Pendola brings you the Lioness Tale. Now it's time to come together and awaken to the liberating spirit that lives at the center of each of our lives. Here's Diane Pendola.
Hello, this is Diane Pendola, and I'm very happy to be hosting this show based on my book, The Lioness Tale, Awakening the Liberating Spirit. Today I'm very excited to be welcoming Jesuit priest and theologian Jake Imperer to our show. Jake is the author of The Enneagram and Spiritual Direction, Nine Paths to Spiritual Guidance. And he's also written a book called Spiritual Direction and the Gay Person. So in past shows, we've introduced you to the Enneagram, and we had a show with Stanford psychiatrist Dr. David Daniels that we dedicated that whole show to the Enneagram. Today, we'll be focusing on the Enneagram as a tool for spiritual growth through the lens of the gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgender experience, otherwise referred to as GLBT. So, welcome, Father Jake.
Happy to be here.
Thank you for taking the time to be with us. Before we begin our conversation, though, I always like to begin the show with a moment of centering. So I'd just like to invite you, Father Jake, as well as me, and as well as everyone who's listening, just to take a moment to come into presence, to come into the now, to come into our own experience of breath, our own experience of life, and just come into contact with our hearts, relax our bodies, and open ourselves to the spirit of this conversation. And this show, just to recap, The Lioness Tale, Awakening the Liberating Spirit, is based on my book, which explores through story and metaphor experiences of imprisonment, both inner and outer. And the last several weeks, we've been focusing on the impact of childhood trauma on both the individual and society, and the imprisoning consequences of that trauma, such as drug addiction, alcoholism, obesity, depression, as well as increased risk for physical ailments, such as heart and lung disease and many others. But today, we will also be looking at the kinds of imprisonment that gay, lesbian, transgender people face. So we go back a ways, don't we, Jake? You taught at the Graduate Theological Union in Berkeley some years ago when I was a student there.
Yes, many years ago.
So we go back a ways. So would you like to begin by introducing yourself and your work with the Enneagram and how it applies to the experience of the GLBT community?
I was first introduced to the Enneagram by one of the, I suppose, the American founders of the Enneagram, might put it that way, Bob Oakes, a Jesuit priest who learned it from Claudio Nerano, who had gone down to Arica, where he studied with Oscar Ochanzo, who had brought the Enneagram, so he claims anyway, from the East. So much about the Enneagram's initial experiences and origin is still remains, I think, somewhat in the cloud, mm-hmm. in a cloudy background. But I had started a program in Berkeley called the Institute for Spirituality and Worship, which is a full-year program of renewal for people, and we decided to put the Enneagram into the program, and for many years it was part of the program, but with not always with satisfactory results. So I decided to take it over myself, and that's when I became more active in the Enneagram itself.
Mm-hmm.
And out of the course of all of that, I taught courses in spiritual direction in the Enneagram and workshops in the Enneagram at kind of the in between semesters and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
The origin of my book was that it came from the fact, really, of the urging of spiritual directors. Both of my books in spiritual direction have been at the urging of spiritual directors. In the case of the Enneagram, it was that many people were coming to spiritual direction who themselves were involved in the Enneagram through workshops or reading and so forth, and they would come and ask their spiritual director about them, and the spiritual director would be at sea or would be lost, wouldn't quite know what to do or what to think about it. And so that was the origin of that book, to help spiritual directors to deal with the Enneagram with people that come to them who had some acquaintance with the system already. And the other book, Spiritual Direction and the Gay Person, really came from the fact that so many spiritual directors, when people who are gay or lesbian or transgendered would come to them seeking spiritual direction, that many directors became very uneasy, not because they were dealing necessarily with sexual issues, but because they were so unfamiliar with the territory. And so I wrote that book in response to that also.
So maybe just to back up for people who are listening, what is spiritual direction?
Well, spiritual direction, I suppose, has many different different definitions, and depends in many ways upon the image that one uses for spiritual direction. Spiritual direction covers the continuum from one side where basically it's a person who's listens to the person's be with them on their spiritual journey to at least give them an opportunity that there is an ear for them, all the way to something which would be perhaps my form of spiritual direction would tend to be a bit more therapeutic. If you look at some of the books that have been written on spiritual direction, one of the more popular ones was a book called Soul Friend. It was a way of trying to capture the idea that we're dealing here with a realm which is beyond simply the psychological soul, and that it is someone who accompanies the person. There's been some reluctance on the part of some to use the word director, direction. It seemed to be too kind of patriarchal and so forth. But whatever it is, I don't think spiritual direction is supposed to be the blind leading the blind, you know. So, I mean, you come to somebody because you think that they have some sense of what the spiritual life is about, or because they know the mystical tradition, or because they're well read into the people who have written in these areas, or because they have some other kind of qualification. So, but basically, it's a form of accompaniment along a journey which is cannot be simply reduced to the emotional or to the psychological.
So, really, it does go to the theme of our show, Awakening the Liberating Spirit, which, of course, is also what the Enneagram is about. So, these two complement each other quite well. If I could quote from your book, you say, the Enneagram is about being awakened from our slumber. It is about becoming aware, having a wider and deeper range of perception. It involves breaking out of the mental and emotional prison in which we find ourselves. So both the Enneagram and spiritual direction are aimed at this, aren't they?
Yes. The idea is, with the Enneagram, it's an instrument, it's a map, it's a grid, whatever you might say, and it works when you put it in conversation with something else, rather than just trying to somehow or other extricate a spirituality from the Enneagram itself. The thing is, though, the Enneagram is has been an instrument that I found very helpful, using it in many ways, but certainly in spiritual direction, because I found that it had the least biases connected with it. When you compare it to something like the Myers-Briggs, the question always arises, to what degree is the Myers-Briggs slanted toward a Western kind of sense of psychology?
Yes.
A Jungian approach. And whereas I found that when I used the Enneagram, I didn't get my usual critiques from, let's say, feminists as it being biased. I found that students of mine who used it in Asia found it worked as well there as it worked in Europe or worked in England worked in the United States.
Mm-hmm. And it works if you bring a Christian kind of understanding and framework to it, as you do with your background. But I also think it works when you bring, I know for Buddhists, can bring their particular spiritual framework and also find great benefit. So it's really quite a wonderful tool in that way.
Yes, because you don't have to use Christian language with it. I mean, that's an overlay that's placed on it, or, mm-hmm. as I said, it's a map, and you can use it for many different purposes. I mean, even the psychological language, which is assigned to the Enneagram for years now, the images or the words that are connected with the various spaces or numbers, if you want to use that language, really was not at the origin of the Enneagram and was really placed upon it when it came to the United States, where we have a tendency to psychologize a great deal. So, it shows that the Enneagram is open, is the kind of map that can respond to many different situations.
Yes. And as I mentioned at the beginning of the show, the last several of our shows have really been looking at childhood wounding, traumatic experiences in childhood, and how they shape our experience and how we begin to pay attention in the world, that we pay attention to some things and we filter out other things. So I wonder if you could speak to this core insight of the Enneagram about childhood wounding and how it might apply to working with people in spiritual direction.
The important thing, I think, is when you're dealing with people who know the system and are trying to use it in spiritual direction, is to look at some of the childhood situations or history or what shaped them, because it's not clear whether the Enneagram, like homosexuality, is how much of it is nature, how much of it is nurture, how much is of one's own essence, and so forth. Mm-hmm. Difficult to answer those questions. Still, with the Enneagram, it seems that in the first 5 to 7 years of one's life, one moved in a certain direction, perhaps for survival, depending upon one's family conditions, what kind of atmosphere one was born in, grew up in, and so forth. And that, in some way, to use Helen Palmer's language, which I prefer, slanted one's attention mm-hmm. in a certain way. It narrowed it, rather than having a kind of a sense of openness about one's view of life, one's stance on life, for various reasons, whatever it might be. And certainly we all know that many children suffer real abuse and difficulties in their early years. In order to survive as a human being, the psyche had to, as it were, turn in on itself or narrow itself or get slanted in such a way that became a dominant issue in their adulthood.
Yes.
And once one can discover something like that, it's helpful, because the Enneagram can then is basically a system of 9 ways of slanting one's attention, but also 9 different ways or paths to grow. You know, so as we talked about one time, is that you have both the wound and you have the gift at the same time.
Yes, and we're going to have to go to break in just a few minutes, but I do want to pick up on that when we come back, that the wound is also the gift, and though we all experience some wound in our formation coming into having a human body, there's something about utilizing the awareness that comes from that into gifts and service. So we're going to be looking more at the transformative aspects of the 9 types when we come back. So right now we'll go to break.
Why have we come to earth? Do you remember? Why have we taken earth?
Welcome back. Once again, I'm your host, Diane Pendola, and you are listening to The Lioness Tale, Awakening the Liberating Spirit. And our guest today is a Jesuit priest and theologian and spiritual director, Father Jake Emperor. And before we went to break, we were just beginning to speak about the transformational gifts of the Enneagram and how each of the nine types actually can be a path towards awakening, which is the theme of the show, and also how the wound that we all experience somewhere, some of us to greater or lesser degrees, can become our gift, especially as we bring the wound to our awareness and begin to work with it. So if you could continue with that. I know from the Christian tradition, this is very familiar, called the wounded healer. We refer sometimes to Jesus as the wounded healer.
Oh, yes. Well, I think as we are moving into this, I want to point out that the value of looking at the early childhood years or even one's adult life insofar that one's wound has continued or one's scientific attention has continued, is that it is easier to identify oneself on the Enneagram spectrum of the nine spaces
mm-hmm.
when you look at it in terms of the negative effects in your life.
Mm-hmm.
Many people say, well, I can't place myself on the Enneagram. I don't know. I'm a little bit of this, I'm a little bit of that, a little bit of that. Well, often it's because they themselves have matured and have advanced and healed in many ways, and so it's not as clear in the person who has perhaps matured more. And by looking at it in terms of your childhood, you get an idea that, first of all, where you are on the Enneagram, you need to be able to identify yourself if you're going to ask, what does the Enneagram, what does it say to me?
Mm-hmm.
Because there are many positive aspects to the Enneagram, just as it identifies more negative aspects.
Mm-hmm.
And then you look at the positives as, and this is what's available, this is where I have energy. If I find myself, let's say I myself am a six, and if I have a sense of what that is, and both in terms of, if I have a good understanding of what that kind of person is or can be, then I can move in that direction. But if I don't know, I mean, if I'm kind of wandering around the Enneagram and have no idea who I am, it's very difficult then to be able to say, well, these are the gifts that are usually associated with this space, mm-hmm. and can I incorporate them into my life anyway?
Mm-hmm.
And the other thing in my book in particular that I realized why people were having such difficulty identifying themselves is because they were unaware of their stage of a development as an adult person.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you're still on the kind of what I call the conformist level, which these levels I got from Beth Liebert, if you're still there, you're kind of still in your spiritually infancy or childhood, and perhaps that you can identify then best to more negative aspects. But when you become a much more mature person, a person who is spiritually oriented, a person who is, in charge in their spiritual lives, you're going to have to look at something different. What are the positive aspects that you're usually associated with this particular space
mm-hmm.
in order to be able to move in that direction?
So we are moving from kind of a less consciousness to more consciousness as we begin to identify our slant of attention, begin to identify what motivates us, begin to identify what our wounds are, to bring them to awareness and to begin to work with them, then the energy is available for this spiritual growth process.
Right, and individual to social.
Yeah.
Often I'm asked, what's the difference between therapy and spiritual direction?
Mm-hmm.
And I've been in therapy for many, many years. Fortunately, I had the opportunity to work with a psychiatrist whom I did not outgrow, but grew along with me. And I would say, for the most part, though, in terms of speaking more generally about therapy and spiritual direction. The difference for me was that in therapy, I laid on a couch, and it cost me more. But they have many, many things in common. Mm-hmm. But the one thing that I feel that if you're going to read, if you really want to push it to the wall, spiritual direction, it seems to me, Christian spiritual direction, that's to which I can speak, must not only help you to deal with who you are, your issues, your journey, your path, but must also move you out of your own life into the larger world. Mm. In other words, it has a kind of, what we in Christian language would use as a kind of an apostolic character to it. Mm-hmm. Whereas I don't think therapy has to do that. Mm-hmm. I think good therapy often does, but I don't think it has to. Mm-hmm. So I think that's another thing. It's obviously moving from a kind of an unconscious level to a highly conscious level is desirable. But one must then, and we're not just talking about the intellect, we're talking about the emotional world.
The wholeness of the person and the,
right.
and the heart, really.
Exactly.
Opening our heart to more than our individual lives. Opening our heart to the world.
Right, and which I think is the way your own book, The Lioness, ends.
Yes.
You know.
Mm-hmm. So what we're talking about here, I think, is it does belong to the realm of spiritual direction, is that we have wounds to our soul, and they're spiritual wounds. In a certain way, they need a spiritual kind of medicine to help us heal and grow and turn them from wounds to gifts. And I'd like to bring it back to the gay, lesbian, transgender experience, because I would imagine that experience has its own sort of soul wound, doesn't it?
Yes, and in terms of your language in your book, it has its own cage,
mm-hmm.
Or many cages, or cages within cages, whatever it is. You have the closets within closets kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
I just last night went to a play called Take Me Out. I think it was on Broadway in 2002. And the play is about, really about baseball, but it's about a baseball character, of one who is really making lots of money and is a very fine baseball player, and then announces that he's gay. And what this does for his team, what this does for the press, what it does for the fans and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you can see, and a great part of the play is that he didn't see why this had to make much of a difference. You
uh-huh.
see. Now, whether that was naivete or whatever it was, but the fact it is, it did, you see. And so you could see these prisons, these cages. And I think it's there's a very special kind of wounding in it, because the coming out of the closet or whatever it is wounds other people in many ways. I mean, there's something about this idea that you are in a relationship with a person of your same sex, which destabilizes people.
Mm-hmm.
Probably because we often have rather superficial ways in which we have identified ourselves as a man or a woman. And we're comfortable with that because it's basically what society gives us.
Mm-hmm.
But then when a person who is gay or lesbian enters into our life, this throws us off kilter, because this goes deeper than, you know, the ordinary forms of identifying oneself as a boy or a girl or a man or a woman.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it has...
it upsets the status quo.
Right, very much so, and they're just cages within cages in this case, it seems
mm-hmm.
to me.
Well, it's interesting, because I think that goes to your theme in your book on spiritual direction, which you've referred to, the conformist is the beginning of the spiritual life, but then there comes a time when we need to move from that conformist, conforming to the family, conforming to society, conforming to our church or our religious structure, and moving into a place where we may have to move away from those in order to be true to ourselves. And I think you could look at particularly the panther's journey in this context, if I could. For people, just to recap the story, the panther basically has this prophetic insight about what's going to be happening to her particular pride, her particular community. And when she takes this insight to the community, she's rejected. And she says in the book on page 53, "And what they did not understand, they feared. They came to fear me. I had been a respected member of my pride, prepared from my earliest days to become a teacher and a leader. Now I was an outcast in the midst of them, an object of their scorn." And certainly I think this could be GLBT experience, don't you think?
Yes, yes, definitely. And just to give some examples from my own spiritual direction, without mentioning any names, of course, but the movement which alienates people around you, or you find yourself isolated, is really that movement from conformity, where you just follow whatever other people's expectations of you are, to the one of more deepened consciousness. But that we can't stay there. Mm-hmm. I have many people over the years who have come to me, especially younger people, men and women, younger men and women who are gay and lesbian, and are into that period where they have accepted themselves. They've come out to some people, some friends, rather gingerly and so forth, but have never come out to their parents. Mm-hmm. And there's this struggle because they want to say that their parents should accept them because they have accepted themselves. They have realize that they're okay with God, that they're good people, that their sexuality is a gift, and so forth. My job is try to help them to see what is the compassionate thing to do. I said, do you think your parents or whoever else is involved are able to accept what you want, what you think they must accept, you know? Mm-hmm. That's a real challenge, I think, for people, mm-hmm. you know, because the fact is a lot of people just don't know how to accept it. The question is, can you force people into acceptance, or is there another way of moving around it? And that's often what we look for. Is there another way of trying to get your parents or your relatives or whoever is blocking, whoever has a block in this regard, come around in some way, you know? One of my directees has a son who is gay, and her technique was to get a copy of my book and just leave it around in the house, you know,
uh-huh.
and to see if, you know, what if that would make some kind of difference, you know,
uh-huh.
those kinds of things.
Mm-hmm. So we're coming up to our next break, but when we come back, let's pick this up and talk a little bit more about this spiritual process for the gay person of moving through these levels from conformity to the next step, which I think is conscientization,
right.
to inter-individual to integration, and how maybe the story casts a little light on that process. Okay, we'll be back in a minute.
You're listening to The Lioness Tale, Awakening the Liberating Spirit, with your host, Diane Pendola. If you would like to contact Diane, please send an email to thelionesstale@gmail.com. Again, that's thelionesstale@gmail.com. Now back to our program.
Hello, welcome back to The Lioness Tale, Awakening the Liberating Spirit. I'm your host, Diane Pendola, and today we are speaking with Jesuit priest and theologian Jake Emperor, who wrote The Enneagram and Spiritual Direction, nine paths to spiritual guidance, as well as spiritual direction and the gay person. And we were just talking about as a gay or lesbian person is coming to terms with their own sexuality, the desire to want to tell family members, and now they're faced with the question, which I think we're all faced with in our spiritual development, really the standard question: what is the compassionate thing to do? What is the loving thing to do that takes into our context not only ourselves and our own needs, but also the needs of others? Is that right?
Yes, yes. I'm just thinking about it in terms of a lioness tale. I mean, at the end, when the lioness gives this great roar, you know, that echoes throughout the world, I mean, mm-hmm. she's still in her cage.
Mm-hmm.
And so the question, what kind of freedom do we want gay, lesbian people to seek?
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes they say, well, it's all I want is to be treated like everybody else. But I think the fact is that since gay, lesbian people present an alternative to traditional sexuality, that they're asked to take on, whether they like it or not, I think, to take on a certain kind of prophetic stance in society.
Mm-hmm.
So it's hard to just say, well, I just want to be treated like everybody else, because everybody else is not there. Now, there are certainly...
And the prophets, by the way, are never particularly embraced.
That's right.
I mean, if you look traditionally at the prophets in our scripture, the prophets are always... because they do upset the status quo. They do ask people to stretch and to see in a different way, to experience themselves in another way. Isn't that right?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, now things are improving. I just read recently about how, you know, in some... high schools and so forth, they're much more receptive, much more hospitable and so forth, and that kind of thing, and how younger people are less hung up on many of these issues than people my age. But still, you know, one can only be, you know, really perfectly accepted in a perfect world, mm-hmm. where everybody else has got their act together. And sexuality has been an issue for all of humanity, and it will continue to be. So there's always going to be that aspect of it. So there's always going to be some possibility, some cage, some prejudice. And so the person will always have to move through this conformist stage.
Mm-hmm.
You know, for a person who defines themselves by the way that they think other people think about them, that's certainly a cage that they need to break out of, you know.
Mm-hmm. And I think the Panther's journey really illustrates this too, because to be true to herself and her own spiritual insight, she, at least for a time, needs to forego the support of her community. And that kind of moves her into what in Christian spirituality we call the dark night of the soul. So if I could read that, maybe you could comment on that. So anyway, the Panther, feeling rejected by her community and feeling like now she's an outcast in their midst, she says, "I sought the solace of solitude. I sought the spacious regions of the inner world, the inner life, and instead I found a desert. Everything I had come to believe, I now came to doubt. All that I had come to value as true rose in my mind and in my heart to mock me as a lie. My own thoughts called me fool, echoing the words spoken to me now by my own family. I remembered my dream, and it appeared on that inner desert like a shimmering mirage, a mere fantasy created by my overwhelming desire. The pride that had swelled in my chest, returning home from my quest, young and full of the power of my dream, now withered in the wilderness like an overripe piece of fruit. It left a hard and wrinkled pit where a living heart once beat. In the center of that pit, I knew the one thing the pride did not want to hear, the one thing I did not want to tell." So it moves her into this move away from conformity, huh? And into a dark night where she begins to question everything.
Yes, but in the story itself, one always has a sense of the freedom of the panther, the way in which she walks around the cage, and the way she stares, and the way she decides to move away, and it reminded me very much of the theme of the Catholic Theological Society's meeting in June, which is called "Dealing with the Impasse." Mm-hmm. What happens to you when you run into an impasse where you see no way out?
Mm-hmm.
This contemplative nun by the name of Constance Fitzgerald, who wrote an article on this years ago, and many people picked up. She also gave a talk there too. This idea that you come to a point where you realize that you have no way of really solving this, like rationally or through argumentation or whatever it is. And somehow you give yourself the situation and you let yourself move through it, you know, which is what I felt that the panther was doing and why she had this freedom, you know, after she had gone through her experience. Like she didn't really fight it, you know, or try to contest it and so forth, but found a way to live through this experience of alienation and certainly darkness.
Mm-hmm.
And that really is what the reason why this was a theme for our meeting was that many people find this in the church today. They find that they're at an impasse with the way the church is going, and they don't know how to deal with it. You know, it's confrontation doesn't work. And argumentation is not helping.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a way in which one learns how to embrace it, but then move on into one's own life, you see, move beyond it, not caught by it. So the lioness at the end of the book is free, you know, completely free, but she doesn't have to be out of this cage. She doesn't have to be back in the forest to be free.
Mm-hmm. Because the cage is part of a reality that's really bigger than her. That exterior circumstance she might not be able to change, but she can change her inner experience. She can have this sense of inner freedom.
Right, and that's due, I think, because the way in which the panther gets her to imagine.
Yes.
I mean, years ago, I had a student at Berkeley who did a dissertation on the imagination and freedom, and her point was you take the woman, let's say in Guatemala or someplace like that, who finds herself in an oppressive situation. You know, she can't change it as such, but she can't move out of the country, she can't create a revolution and so forth, but she can change the images in her spirit, in her mind, the images of oppression. She doesn't have to define herself that way. She replaces them with images of freedom and liberation, you know.
Yes, and that's what the panther does ask the lioness to do, which I think is so important for us to realize that the imagination is a spiritual faculty, and it's creative, and we can actually use it to really change our inner experience from imprisonment to freedom.
I always tell people that the imagination is the place where you find God,
mm-hmm.
you know, rather than your mind or something like that. You know.
Because, imagination isn't just mind, it's also really the heart.
And imagination is that strange place. It's a confluence of
everything.
Of thought and emotion and whatever else. It has a certain transcendent quality to it, yeah.
Yes, So just to go back to share with the people that resolution of the panther, that she does surrender to the darkness. She doesn't try to make it different than what it is. There is a certain surrender. And she says here on page 54, "I remained in a darkness that invaded all of my senses. It permeated my thinking, my imagining, and my feeling. I reached out with all my faculties to grasp the knowing within that held to the integrity of my choice, and it eluded me. Days passed, but I fell deeper and deeper into a darkness of soul. But I fell not into what was known, but into what knew me, not into anything I could grasp, but into something that grasped me, that held me in benediction, that would never let me go. So going back to what we've talked about on former shows, this is really the move towards essence, towards that essential, to the divine, which is bigger than our mind or our senses can grasp, that grasps us. And then we have a certain cosmic confidence as a result.
There's so many of the spiritual writers, talk about that experience in so many different ways. You know, I'm just thinking of somebody. What do you think of the cloud of unknowing in the medieval period? I'm thinking of Thierry de Chardin, who in his Divine Milieu. I mean, there's a way in which there's something always bigger, something more transcendent, something that that inhabits you, you know, and as it were catches you up rather than you being the person who's doing the action.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's what happened in to the panther, and that's ultimately you come out on the side of freedom then.
Yes. So on that note, we need to go to another break, and when we come back, we'll need to wrap up our conversation. So,
okay.
See you in a couple minutes. Hello, welcome back to The Lioness Tale, Awakening the Liberating Spirit, and we're speaking with Jake Emperor today, Jesuit priest and spiritual director. So in this last segment of our show, Jake, could you speak to the importance of a spiritual practice? Because really that's what we're needing to support what we're talking about here, the panther, the lioness. How do they get to this? This awakening, this inner freedom, if not through a daily, really spiritual practice, and maybe even the importance of a spiritual guide, a spiritual director.
Yeah, spiritual practice is indispensable. Otherwise, all that we've talked about, or you know, whatever I've written, so forth, whatever you read in spiritual books, simply remains an abstraction. Perhaps we start with your book, The Lioness Tale. It certainly was a spiritual practice on the part of the panther, wasn't coming back, you know, each night and being there and talking to the lioness, and only gradually did the lioness wake up or be able to claim herself. But that was because there was something that. It wasn't a kind of a insight, and all of a sudden everything changed. It was because she had a certain fidelity to a practice, even though when it didn't seem to be going very far, wasn't very successful. Anybody who is going to try to do meditation or try to follow a spiritual path cannot expect that. This is the kind of thing that that happens instantaneously. Although we love to have, you know, immediate gratification and immediate results, but the depth of the spiritual life is in such a way that it requires a person to stick with it, whatever the spiritual practice might be. I often start people off with a very simple spiritual practice. People who perhaps are what we might call novices in the spiritual life, and I'd say, you know, take 5 minutes a day of silence. Mm-hmm. Every day, silence, 5 minutes. You don't have to say anything. You don't have to take any particular prayers. but to just then do that and see what happens, you know, mm-hmm. 5 minutes of quiet. Mm-hmm. And it's amazing how challenging that is for some people. But it is a practice. And then eventually people move to other kinds of practices, and whether it's Carmelite practices or Buddhist practices or Ignatian practices, whatever it is. But all these major schools of spirituality, all these, they all have practices for the same reason that the spiritual life is about a certain commitment to a way of life.
And the Panther suggests some of those practices, of course, in very condensed form for the sake of the story, that could be seen as practices throughout our spiritual life: fasting, vision quest, kind of going away for solo retreat, solo time. Those are all things that are integrated there as she begins to really experience her inner freedom.
Yes, that's right. That's right. As it needs to be done, because the freedom, if it were just intellectual freedom, then simply somebody giving you some great insight would do it, you know. But that's not the kind of freedom we're talking about, and that's not the way that spiritual freedom is attained. And it's attained only by becoming more and more in contact with yourself, mm-hmm. whatever kind of language you want to use. But you must be in touch with what Jung would call the deep self, or the Enneagram language that's placed on it calls essence, mm-hmm. whatever it is, soul, whatever kind of language you want to use. But this is a contact which is not conceptual or cognitive or simply emotional. It's what is beyond all of that. Mm-hmm. And only time and a steady commitment to a practice will do that for one.
We only have a few minutes left, and I do want to just bring it back to the gay lesbian person, because in a conversation before the show, you mentioned that you think there is a particular charism. I think the Panther actually represents that being faithful to yourself, that maybe takes you into this dark night, the sense of being all alone, but that you come out on the other side with something valuable to offer to the greater community, a kind of a prophetic kind of charism. And maybe just in the last minute that we have left, if you could tie in spiritual practice with that particular charism of this group of people, maybe.
Well, I think whatever practice they assume, it must be based upon the idea that homosexuality is God's gift to humanity in a particular way. And whether it is raising the challenge of other people's sexuality, whether it's simply to get people to think differently, whatever, all those kinds of things have a certain prophetic character to them, and those are kinds of the challenges they present to other people. The practice is probably for gay, lesbian people, transgender people, and so forth. Here is something that will keep them steady in the fact that they're always going to be, as it were, against this kind of impasse. Namely, that there will always be people who will have difficulty with their way of life and with the fact that they have an alternative way of sexuality.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, we just have just a few 30 seconds left, and I really want to thank you for coming on. I really think that this is going to go out to people and help people we don't know and will never meet. So thank you so much for giving us your time. Is there any other just quick announcement you'd like to make before we leave?
I think we need now to think about, in regard to the whole question of gay, lesbian, transgendered, and so forth, I think we need to now look at the kind of the cultural aspect of it and the prophetic quality there. You know, a lot of it has been pretty much white, Anglo-Saxon. I think we really need to look at the cultural challenges that the people from those cultures bring.
Mm-hmm. Very good. Okay, well, that's Jake Emperor. He has a couple books, The Spiritual Direction, for the gay person, and spiritual direction, nine paths to spiritual guidance. I hope you'll join us next week. We're welcoming Chris Stewart Price, Gestalt Awareness Practice Teacher, back to our show next week. And she'll be talking more about the shamanic journey, the power of dreams, and the power of the imagination. So thanks for listening, and thank you so much, Jake.
Thank you. It was a pleasure.
See you next week.
Author of The Lioness Tale, minister and Enneagram teacher Diane Pendola is the director and co-founder of Skyline Harvest, an eco-contemplative center in the Sierra foothills of Northern California. Living on 200 private acres with wooded trails and spectacular views, she offers Lioness Tale workshops, Enneagram consultations, and retreat opportunities. Diane created and conducts an in-prison transformational program called the Lioness Tale Prison Project. At Skyline Harvest, as well as inside prison walls, she advances the theme of her Voice America radio show, The Lioness Tale, Awakening the Liberating Spirit. If you are interested in sponsoring this life-changing program for people inside prison, or if you wish to purchase Diane's book, schedule a consultation, retreat, or workshop at Skyline Harvest, contact Diane at www.ecocontemplative.org or call 530-288-0308. Again, that's ecocontemplative.org or call 530-288-0308.